This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
I am now here with Isabel Large from the South Cheshire Beekeepers Association. Welcome to the Jodcast.
Hello, my name's Isabel and I'm a beekeeper.
So what brings you to the Blue Dot Festival? It's not somewhere I necessarily expect to find beekeepers.
The head gardener at Jodrell Bank is a beekeeper herself and a member of South Cheshire, and so she has asked us to be present at a week in May and a follow-on at a week here. And there's actually an apiary on site where there are live bees. We are just here today to educate the public and have what we call our virtual hive, which has photographs of bees, but is a real full-sized hive.
Oh, wow. And sorry, I just need to double-check, might be a stupid question. An apiary, I'm assuming, is that...
An apiary is where we keep bees.
Ah, okay, that's good to know. So could you tell me a little bit more about keeping bees?
Okay, there is an awful lot to learn about beekeeping. It's very popular, on the increase at the moment, but people really do need to do a course in beekeeping before they have their own colony of bees. There's a huge amount to learn. They're under threat at the moment, both from pesticides, adverse weather conditions, lack of forage, and we are very, very dependent on them because they are pollinators and a lot of our foods depend on bees and other pollinating insects.
And what drew you to beekeeping?
I first learned about bees as an A-level student. I'm a scientist and I've always had an interest in bees, and now I've got a bit more time. I'm now interested in keeping them and find them absolutely fascinating.
And for you, what is the most interesting thing about keeping bees?
The fact that they are living creatures, but wild creatures. You can't domesticate them. All you can do is help them. And, of course, there's always the honey at the end of it.
No, that sounds fascinating. And what does beekeeping actually involve? I know I kind of have this image of people in the big white suits, but other than that, I have no idea.
You have your first small colony of bees, and then it's your responsibility to try and help them build up, protect or help to protect them from disease or treat them from disease, try and stop them from swarming, which could be a nuisance to other people. During the summer season, it involves you opening up the hive once a week, checking that all's well, that you've got a laying queen, that the hive is building up, it's healthy, there are no problems. But then over the winter months, you need to ensure they've got enough food, you haven't taken too much honey from them, but then you don't open them up for about 4 months until spring comes again and they start to build up.
That sounds like a nerve-wracking 4 months because you don't know what's happening inside and you kind of get to spring and just have to go, oh, what's there?
That's correct. And you can open up your hive and all can be well and you think, great, another year. Or you can open them up and find that they haven't survived the winter, and that's devastating.
Oh, that sounds awful. Yeah. So do you keep any particular types of bees?
There are many different types of bees. We're obviously interested in the European honeybee. There are a group of beekeepers in this country who are trying to bring back the traditional black British bee, but most beekeepers, our bees are mongrels. They come from all over the place, and to us they're just honeybees. So you don't have like distinct varieties like you do of dogs, but you do have different types in different parts of the world.
And is that lack of distinct varieties just because, you know, one of them is more pervasive and has driven out the other, or...?
It's just the way they have evolved and they've adapted to particular conditions. Ours is the European honeybee, which can survive our climate. It's very good at putting stores away for the winter, because obviously during our winters, then they can't go out and forage because of the cold.
And what would you say is like the biggest challenge about keeping bees? Because obviously you're saying it's a very complex thing, you have to go on a course to learn about it, but what for you is the thing you find most difficult?
The biggest challenge is trying to keep down the levels of a parasite called varroa, which is now in most of the beehives in this country. It reduces the immunity of bees to their natural viral-caused diseases. There are lots of other diseases, and of course there is the problem of this colony collapse, which is first seen in America. We're not entirely sure, but it could be because the bees are under stress, it could be because of disease, but if you've got diseased bees, then you end up with dead bees.
Oh, that sounds bad. So what's this colony collapse that you're talking about?
There could be a number of reasons. It could be the way the beekeeper treats them, it could be the fault of chemicals, pesticides, it could be the weather, it could be all sorts of things, it could even be climate change, we just don't know. We don't see a lot of it in this country. Our biggest problem is the various diseases which can reduce the numbers in the hives. And so we have to be on the lookout. Some are notifiable, some we can treat for, some we can't. All we can do is try and ensure our bees are given the best possible conditions to allow them to naturally develop. They are, after all, a wild creature.
Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic. And is there anything that our listeners could do to help with the bee problems that we're seeing? Obviously, I know they can't necessarily create their own hives, but is there anything that we should be doing, whether it's campaigning or anything else?
They can start by planting bee-friendly plants, which don't just only benefit honeybees, but also all the other pollinators. Other than that, it's just supporting the beekeepers wherever they can, buying natural honey rather than imported honey, and being prepared to pay the price of beekeepers' honey rather than the cut-price honey from supermarkets, which we have a certain amount of evidence to indicate that some of it is not all it's made out to be.
Yeah, I did see some statistic, I can't remember exactly what it was, but recently saying about how much honey in the supermarkets are fake, which I just couldn't, and that a lot of it is sugar syrup. I'm not claiming to know exactly what that is, but it amazed me.
Yes, that's absolutely true. We know that some countries are exporting far more honey than they can actually produce, and it's possible that it is adulterated with sugar, or the bees are fed on just sugar and make a sort of honey from that. We also know that the Manuka honey, which commands huge prices, more is sold in this country than New Zealand, which is the natural origin of Manuka honey. It's more than they can actually export. So somebody somewhere is making a lot of money.
Ah, well, that's always good to know. Well, thank you for talking to us today on the Jodcast. It's fascinating to learn a little bit about beekeeping, and hopefully some of our listeners will go away and plant some bee-friendly plants.
Excellent. Thank you very much.